Up next on Tapestry, we're headed to Wellsville, New York. First, we hit the greens with Mike Wagner, superintendent of the Wellsville Golf and Country Club.
Golf is a game. Like, you should be coming here to have fun. And if you're not having fun, why are you here? You know, I want to create a place for people to have fun.
Then it's time for lunch at Texas Hot, a family-run diner serving generations of locals and run by generations of the same family.
Well, the customers love coming here because it's such a staple and nothing changes. That's what they love about it.
And each July, Wellsville fills the skies with color. We'll meet Vicki Ketchner, a hot air balloon pilot who's helped shape the town's soaring tradition.
We want to share our craft and our sport and get people involved and excited about ballooning. I could talk about ballooning all day. It just makes you smile.
That's up next, right after this.
Compact Science is your gateway to the science of everything in our region. Join host Sarah Jane Gomlick-Green and investigate the geology of Niagara Falls, discover the chemistry in sponge candy, and learn how density affects lake effect snow. Watch Compact Science on the Buffalo Toronto Public Media YouTube channel.
From in-depth reporting to musical masterpieces, dramas, and mysteries to local bands, Buffalo Toronto Public Media delivers it all. Stay informed, be inspired, and join us. This is Public Media.
Welcome to Tapestry. This week, come along with us to Wellsville, New York in Allegheny County. The rolling greens of the Wellsville Golf and Country Club have seen generations of golfers, seasoned pros, local leagues, and weekend players alike. But keeping this picturesque course in top shape takes more than just mowing the fairways. For years, Superintendent Mike Wagner has been the steady hand behind the scenes, reading the weather, managing the land, and responding to every curve the course throws his way. Mike, thanks for joining us this morning on an absolutely beautiful early summer day.
It is beautiful.
I can see why you work here.
Yeah. That's like,
this is amazing.
Probably my favorite part about the job is being outside and living this life.
How did you first get involved in this industry and in this business?
Well, my dad was a golf course superintendent, so I grew up in that, you know, around golf courses and that kind of work pretty much my entire life. Mm-hmm. And then when I think I was 19 at the time, I started to work for my dad and loved it. Mm-hmm. The place that we both worked for asked me if I'd like to go to school. So I said, absolutely.
Wow.
Yeah. So they sent me to school at Rutgers University.
Okay.
And I did well.
To do this kind of work?
Yes.
Wow, yep. Interesting.
Yeah, they have a program at Rutgers that's specifically for golf course management.
Mm-hmm. Talk to me about some of the challenges and opportunities of operating a course and taking care of a course where a river runs through the middle of it.
It can be a blessing.
In what way?
That's where we pull our water from to irrigate.
Oh.
So we pull directly out of the river.
Uh-huh.
It can also be a nightmare when it's raining every day and it starts to come up and gets up to the edge, and sometimes it comes over the banks.
So, you know, when you see golf on television, you watch golf on television, and you see that the lines are immaculately straight,
mm-hmm.
right? Those are really big mowers.
They are.
But the way that works under, what does it look like underneath? Is it just a lot of different lawnmower blades?
Well, we use mostly John Deere equipment.
Mm-hmm.
We have a John Deere 2500B, which is a greens mower that we use to cut greens with. We also have another one of those that we cut tees with, just set at a different height.
Okay.
We have a fairway mower. What we use to cut shorter grass, they're called reel mowers.
Okay.
Which you've probably seen a reel mower. Sometimes you see Amish people with the push mowers that they use. Those are reel mowers.
Oh, so right. So instead of the blade spinning horizontal,
it spins like a
cylinder.
Correct.
Or how does that get the cut that you need?
Get a cleaner cut, a much mm-hmm. cleaner cut. You can adjust it so that mm-hmm. the cut is perfect, so mm-hmm. that you can get that really fine cut. And you want to do that because a fine cut like that keeps the grass healthier. than, say, a rotary blade where you're basically ripping the top of the grass off. You have a lot of open area when you use a rotary blade.
Okay.
A real mower, you get a nice clean cut, like scissors almost.
When I cut my grass, I was told I shouldn't cut it the same direction every time.
Well, if you cut grass, most types of grass, if you cut them in the same direction over and over and over again, they start to lay down in that direction. And then nothing really good comes from that, especially from a playability standpoint. Like if you cut fairways the same way every time and the grass is laid down this way and your ball's here and you're trying to hit the ball this way, you're hitting into the grain of the grass,
right,
which will grab your club.
Right.
It's not something a golfer wants.
No, not at all. You don't want the grass fighting you.
Right. We actually have a grid pattern that we mow by, specifically on greens, because that's the most important. Every day they get mowed in a different direction. It's kind of like a clock.
Okay.
Like Monday we mow 6 to 12, then Tuesday we'll mow 2 to 8, mm-hmm, and we just keep going around the clock like
that. Like 9 to 3?
Yep.
Oh, wow. So what should I be doing at home every time I cut my grass?
I mean, at home it's not as big of a problem because your grass is going to be longer, so it doesn't get laid down like that as much.
Mm-hmm.
But you should still cut in a different direction every time. It's just good for it.
How large is your crew?
Very small.
Okay, but tell me about them.
I have 6 crew members, which mm-hmm, a lot of times works out to actually more like 5 crew members because somebody's always off. The guys that I have now are great. They're all pretty much capable of every job on the course, which mm-hmm, is, you know, cutting greens, cutting tees, approaches, rough, fairways, weed eating. There's water coolers that we change nearly daily. Tee markers get moved. I mean, there's a million things.
Really?
As we were talking, one of Mike's groundskeepers rode by and stopped for a chat.
That's the oldest mower we have. It's got the most hours on it.
Hey, I'm Lynn Bader. Good to meet you.
I'm Dave Denning.
Good to meet you. Nice to meet you. So how long have you worked at this course?
14 years.
What do you love most about working on a golf course?
I'm outside. Most of the time I'm doing my thing, and now I'm out here on irrigation. I mow. It's just beautiful. It's nice. The people are nice. Everything you do out here, it's all freedom, and the people come and they greet you. They see you're working hard. They throw you water.
Aww.
Yeah, it's nice. It's very family oriented. As far as a golf course, I consider him like a family member to me, and he's my boss.
You know, we started the interview by saying that this isn't a job, it's a craft.
It is. It is. Mm. Everything we do, when I first started into the industry of mowing golf courses, it's nothing like taking care of my own house yard. Nothing like it.
Well, exactly. It's like you have people over everywhere. What inspires you to come to work every day, and what do you love most about your work?
Well, I think at this place in particular, I'm given a lot of freedom. I've said for a long time that, you know, people get upset about golf and there's all these things, but golf is a game. Like, you should be coming here to have fun. I think that's what it is for me. I want to create a place for people to have fun.
Coming up next, we take you from the fairways to a favorite local diner that's been serving Wellsville for more than a century. Right after this snapshot of Wellsville history.
Nestled in the heart of Wellsville, there's a house that turns heads. Not just for its elegant Italianate architecture, but because, well, it's bright pink. Built between 1866 and 1868 by pharmacist Edwin Bradford Hall, this 3,500 square foot home, complete with 3 floors and a cupola, was inspired by a villa Hall and his wife admired in Lake Como, Italy. And the color? Hall mixed the pink paint himself in his pharmacy. But this isn't just an historic home, it's a living legacy. The house has been in the Hall family for over 150 years. Today, it's lovingly preserved by descendants Jay and Christy Wolfell. Inside, you'll find original marble fireplaces, chandeliers, and even a fossil collection that was once showcased at the 1901 Pan American Exposition in Buffalo. In 2021, it earned a spot on the National Register of Historic Places. While the Pink House remains a private residence, its online presence has fostered a community of enthusiasts who appreciate its architectural beauty and historical significance. The active social media engagement ensures that the legacy of the Pink House continues to be celebrated and preserved for future generations.
During our day in Wellsville, we stopped for lunch at a place where the coffee is always hot and the stories flow just as easily. For more than 100 years, Texas Hot has been serving up comfort food and comfort itself. I sat down with three generations of this family-run diner to talk about the evolution of this community staple.
We're going to pass the mic around, and I'd like you to introduce yourselves. We'll start here to my left.
Hello, my name is Demetrius Raptus. I am the fourth generation here at Texas Hot.
Good day, everyone. I'm Michael Raptus. I am the third generation here at the Texas Hot in Wellsville, born and raised here.
And I'm Jim Raptus, of the second generation. I inherited it from my dad, and then to my son Mike, and now to my grandson Demetrius.
So how did Texas Hot get started in the first place? Who would like to take that one? Jim, you?
I'll take that
one. All right.
It started in 1921. Mm. My dad had a partner called James Regas, and they were from the same part of Greece, and they were second or third cousins. Mm. But better than that, they lived together in Johnsonburg, Pennsylvania, where they both worked in the tannery down there. And they got to know each other very, very well, become very good friends. So when Jim Regas opened this place, he had in mind all the time to bring my father up here to be his partner. And my dad came up in January of 22. And they were partners from then on until I took over with Jim Regas' son, Gus. My dad used to work, 10 hours a day, 7 days a week, no days off.
Wow.
And, it was that type of a commitment that made this place eventually what it is today.
We are going to have lunch here. Very excited about that. If I order a Texas Hot, what am I getting?
A Texas Hot is a hot dog with mustard, meat sauce, and onions. Texas Hot sauce. It's not too spicy.
You're sure? You promise? Pinky swear.
Promise.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about the menu, how it started, and maybe how it's evolved over time.
Well, it started very simply with the hot dogs and hamburgers and pies, that type of stuff. And then when Gus and I got involved, we start expanding our menu into salads and more so for dinners. And with every generation, they add or subtract items to the menu as they see fit.
How have you seen the evolution of the menu, of the clientele? I mean, here we are, it's 2025. Obviously, some things change, some things stay the same.
Well, the customers love coming here because it's such a staple and nothing changes. That's what they love about it, is just that nostalgia of the Texas Hot, affordable prices. The menu started off small, like my papu said, which is Greek for grandfather, Jim. But over time, they found what they were good at, and a lot of the stuff we do is homemade. The cooks get here at 4:30 in the morning to make those pies.
When you were asking how things changed, it hasn't changed. It is the same. As a matter of fact, a really quick story, I believe it was in the mid-90s, we redid the interior, new tile floor, new walls. We literally gutted the place, new plumbing, new electric, and so we were closed for a couple of months. And as I would come in and see different colors on the wall, I enjoyed it because it was a different color.
Oh, yeah.
Come to find out, it was just the primer. And the next day I'd come in, and here we are right back to the same thing. So even when we redid the place, it was designed to look exactly the same.
The renovation was just a freshening of the same.
Right, right.
Okay.
I do want to comment that these booths were installed in 1937, and we still have the same wooden booths, although they've been refinished two or three times.
All right, so Demetrius, there's some shoes you got to fill. How are you feeling about the future of Texas Hot?
I am definitely proud, a little nervous because those shoes are big, trying to fill the first, second, and third to make everybody happy, not only the family, but to keep Texas hot the way it is and a big part of the community.
In addition to the family members, you got a lot of other folks here that are working. Talk to me a little bit about your employees and what they've meant to you over the years.
We have employees that have been working here 20, 30,
Absolutely.
40 years.
How long have you worked here?
I'm on my 37th year.
Oh my gosh. So what's your name?
My name is Barb.
You feel like part of the family?
Well, yeah, considering I was here before half of them were born. I'm making you two hots, which is a 21, two on one plate.
Okay.
A little bit of mustard, meat sauce, chopped onion, and a dash of salt.
Gotta have the dash of salt.
Absolutely.
I consider a lot of the employees family, and that's what I say to them a lot is, you know, this is a family environment, and we want you to work hard, but be a part of the Texas Hot family. And it is awesome to see, you know, some of my father's workers still working here after decades and decades, and I really do consider them, you know, part of the family.
How is it working with family as opposed to not working with family?
I can't answer that because I've never not worked for family. So from my perspective, when I'm down here working with the next generation, it's difficult because am I dad or am I the boss?
All right.
So that's always challenging.
Jim, I'm going to throw that question to you. What was it like for you to have a dad hat on, to have a boss hat on, and when were you willing to take that boss hat off? Or
it's not off.
I was going to say, or haven't you taken it off yet?
I'm a consultant.
Oh,
so
okay.
When I come in here, I see things I like, I tell them. I see things I don't like, I tell them.
Mm.
I'm not the type of person that says, well, you got to do it. I suggest, and now it's their job to run the place. So sometimes they take my suggestions, sometimes they don't.
Gotcha. And if you had a chance, you got a microphone in front of you right now, if you wanted to say something to the people of Wellsville, what would you say?
I'm so grateful that from generation to generation, they have been very good to us. We're very, very thankful to see the people coming in and being part of the community as a whole.
Gentlemen, thank you so much for spending some time with me today. And I think that's my stomach you hear growling. So we're going to order some lunch.
Thank you. Thank you very much for coming down and honoring the Texas Hot and the Wellsville community also.
So far, we've taken you on a golf adventure, a food adventure, and coming up next, we take you on a much higher adventure when Tapestry returns.
Explore the Underground Railroad's final stop. Learn about how the Latine workforce organized to overcome discrimination and follow the timeline of immigration in Western New York.
So remember, history surrounds you and includes you.
Watch Compact History on the Buffalo Toronto Public Media YouTube channel.
From your morning commute to quiet evenings at home, Buffalo Toronto Public Media is always there with trusted news, inspiring stories, and timeless music. It's your connection to a world of wonder. This is Public Media.
Welcome back to Tapestry. I'm your host, Lynn Bader. In July, there's a hot air balloon rally in Wellsville that fills the skies with color and wonder, drawing crowds from across the region.
So my balloon is what's known as an AX7, which holds 77,000 cubic feet of air.
One of the beautiful balloons is called Blue Bayou, piloted by Wellsville native Vicki Ketchner.
We have two 15-gallon propane tanks that we carry on board. Pressures have to be 100 PSI for my burners to operate efficiently. I have to turn the burners on. There's switches. If you can hear the propane. To get lift, you typically have to be 100 degrees hotter than the outside air temperature. Ballooning is definitely a team sport. We have my crew. I'll go down. My husband, Mark, who's hiding. My son, Braden. And then I have my parents, Dick and Darlene, and my best friends, Tony and Kelly.
We took a few minutes to chat with Vicki and her dad, Dick Nidegger, about her start in aviation and the annual rally that's become a cherished tradition.
So I grew up around ballooning. Mm-hmm. My dad was a crew chief for a woman who handmade her own balloon. Ooh. Back in 1980. Pat Young, she was the drapery lady here in town. I was 2 years old when she built her balloon. Did the sewing in the basement of her house, and she cut the panels at the Christian Temple Church in their gymnasium.
I tried to get my license. The kids came along. I couldn't afford to get my license or continue, so my best thing was to get one of the girls interested.
There you go.
We arranged to get Vicki a flight.
Okay.
And the rest is pure heaven.
How involved was that? What does it take to get that license?
So I ended up going to a ground school in Cincinnati. FAA says you have to have a minimum of 10 hours of flight in order to be able to get your private certificate. But you also have to have a flight instructor to sign off that you're competent to take that flight test to go for your license.
So this is a legitimate aircraft.
It is. Yes, has an N number registered just like an airplane. A lot of what you talk about in ground school is weather, airspace.
How do you assess the weather patterns? What are good conditions to go up? What are not great conditions to go up?
So before every flight, we have to get a weather briefing. Because we don't have necessarily a weather station here, we're looking at weather all around the immediate area. So I'm going to look at weather in Rochester, Jamestown, Elmira, Bradford, Pennsylvania, because I need to see a full synopsis of what's happening. And I can tell you what happens on the ground might not be what's happening up above.
Ah.
And a lot of people, I think, get confused and frustrated because it might be beautiful on the ground. It might be calm. But at 3,000 feet above the surface, the winds could be going at 30 or 40 knots. That is not safe for us to fly.
It's important, I think, for people to know that because it's not, you're not being overly cautious. You're being appropriately cautious.
Yes.
The balloon controls the lift, so high, going up and down. How do you control whether the balloon goes left or right?
Okay, so there is no steering. You go with the wind. If I want to go up, I'm going to heat the air hotter so mm-hmm. that we get that lift. If I want to come down, I have a vent line which opens a part of the top to let hot air out. When we're going up and down, I am constantly evaluating the direction that we're going in. Mm-hmm. So when we get to a site, we will launch what's called a pie ball. It's just a little helium balloon. We'll let it go. That is your best indication of what the winds are doing because you can see in real time how fast it takes us out of here, the direction it's going, and you'll see it change at different altitudes if there's other wind directions. So before I even launch, I have an idea of what altitude I want to fly and what direction I'm going to go.
And you have a crew following you?
Yep, I have a chase crew that follows me.
Okay.
As I said, we have radio contact with them so that my crew knows, okay, we're going to launch here, we're going north. So they're going to head north and they try to stay in front of me.
Vicki, you literally grew up with the balloon rally. I mean,
yes.
It's been around since 1975. What does it mean to be a part of the Wellsville Balloon Rally since you are from here?
It is the best. It's mm-hmm. my favorite week out of the whole year. It gets crazy busy, but it's fun because other pilots come in and they do rely on me being a local pilot.
The community as a whole, I think, really embraces the idea of the balloons. It gives them kind of an airborne mosaic to look at. With 30-some balloons that we have at our rally, and every one is different shapes, you have different colors, different color schemes. It's a beautiful picture when they're up there, no matter whether you're on the ground, whether you're flying, looking at the other pilots flying along.
Some rallies you go to, you can't get anywhere near the balloons. And us as pilots, we like to talk to people. We want to share our craft and our sport and get people involved and excited about ballooning.
So a lot of times when she lands, there's so many kids around. So what we normally have to do when you land, you will try to squeeze all the air out the top of the balloon, and that leaves a big mass of material on the ground. What she'll do is she'll have a whole conga line full of kids, everybody holding up a piece yep. of the balloon. So what we'll do is we'll have the kids help us squeeze the air out. So we'll ask them to all come around the balloon, turn around, jump up and sit down and wiggle, wiggle, wiggle on the balloon to try to get the air out. Aww. The flatter you have that balloon when you pack it up, the easier it's going to be to pack. We call it stuffing the envelope.
Talk to me about what this region looks like from up there.
It's a whole different world up there. You look down and everything down below is peaceful.
It is truly beautiful. Once you get up to a certain height, sometimes you don't necessarily notice the hills. Everything kind of looks flat.
Yeah.
So we don't necessarily always know until we get closer to the ground if we're over a hill. It's just a tapestry. I mean, it really is when you're up there and looking around. And as I said, you have this 360 degree panoramic view.
Did she say tapestry? I think she did.
I did.
You said tapestry. I love that. But it does make me think about from above. You know, it's you can kind of see the unity of your community.
Yes.
In the landscape.
And you know, I've been doing this all my life, and I'll tell you what, if I see a balloon in the sky, I'm still like that little kid going, there's a balloon, let's go chase it.
That wraps up this episode of Tapestry. Next week, you'll find us in Dunkirk, New York, spending a beautiful day by the water. Think lighthouses, boardwalks, and walleye fishing. I hope you'll join me. What's happening in your town? Let us know by emailing us at tapestry@btpm.org. Tapestry is a production of Buffalo Toronto Public Media, and you can listen to all of our episodes at btpm.org or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm your host, Lynn Bader. Thanks for listening.